Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 and Hummel's Wharf. It is great to have you with us on this Wednesday. Bob Flounders in a few moments, but first, the play-by-play call of the day.
Don't let him catch it. 5 seconds to go. Mason, the pull-off jumper. Yes! 1.8. Jackson inbound. Matt Jones. And Kansas will win it. The Blue Devils go on a 7-0 run in the last minute and a half, only to have their hearts broken by Frank Mason III. The winning jumper, 21 points on the night, as the Jayhawks knock off the Blue Devils, 77-75.
Dan Shulman with the call on ESPN last night. Kansas rallies to beat Duke 77-75. Up next for Duke, Penn State. What I found interesting about that game, though, in watching it last night, was essentially Mike Krzyzewski only played six players. Now, the two freshmen, the two prize freshmen above all, Jackson, by the way, is a top 10 NBA pick. I mean, he's the only freshman that's playing right now. But the other two, Tatum and Harry Giles, aren't playing. And there are a lot of rumors going around that neither one may end up playing this year, and they're just going to go to the NBA. But we'll see. But he only played six guys last night, which told me in a game like that against Kansas, those are the six players he trusted. That spoke volumes to me. All right. And that will be, by the way, a 12:30 game on Saturday. So let's bring in Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Hi, Bob. Great to hear you on the other end, as always.
Steve, always a pleasure. Plenty to talk about. I mean, it's just one of the more amazing mid-Novembers, I think, in recent memory, I think, for Penn State.
So, as you've watched this play out, what are some thoughts that have run through your mind?
It's hard to focus on one, but I think I said this before, just the 180 that Penn State's been able to pull off since the Michigan game number one, and also, to me, I just think a couple of things that, to me, I think are flying a little bit under the radar. Number one is the development and the play of the defensive line and the depth of that unit. I didn't really think by the end of September that they were where they needed to be. Now, I know there's some young players, but, Steve, I'm trying to remember when Penn State had depth like this on the defensive line. They've had some good teams over the years.
Right.
Even that, you know, 2005 team, those guys never came off the field, the front four. Yeah. They just were on the field. They played 60, 65 snaps, and they were remarkably fresh. Sean Spencer has developed a group that is legitimately, I think, 12 deep or more, and that depth is showing up late in games. You saw it against Ohio State. You saw it against even Indiana when Kevin Givens made that play on fourth down. I just think that has really gone from kind of one of the weaker links to a strength. The other thing, Steve, is just I really enjoy watching kind of – I think when James brought in Joe Moorhead and then also Matt Limegrover, it just seems like no matter what goes on in a game, whether it's injuries or adjustments, nothing is too big. The moment never becomes too big. Mm-hmm. And they can kind of figure things out on the fly and implement them. And you're seeing that show up in the second halves of games where, I mean, they are clearly one, if not the best, one of the best teams in the Big Ten in the second half on offense. Consistently, to me, that's been an overriding theme throughout this win streak, just how well they've played on offense and how well they've been able to adjust and figure things out. Those things really I mean, I know it's easy to focus on, you know, the college playoff and the Big Ten title game chances and all of that, but just the improvement they've made since, you know, the second half of that Minnesota game and the strides they've made, to me, it's just something that I'm just not really, you know, used to seeing with the Penn State team, not only in the last couple of years, but even before that.
There, you mentioned Sean Spencer, so let's start with, I want to stay with the defensive line for a moment. This is something that was done by James Franklin and Sean Spencer at Vanderbilt. In certain situations, they put four defensive ends in. I remember we made a big deal about how Ohio State does it. Because I consider Givens a converted defensive end. So Givens, Buchholz, they put Sharif Miller, Torrence Brown out there. What has that package meant to what Penn State's been able to do in terms of pressure and what they and the possibilities with it?
Well, I mean, I think what it means is you can get home with four, and you don't have to blitz. If you want to blitz, you can.
Yeah.
If you see a matchup to exploit, but you can get home or get close to get home with four, and it's not it's those guys. They also have they're keeping Sickles and Schwann fresh, and it's just I mean, I just think that you know typically the thinking, Steve, is that as a game goes on. You know, a decent offensive line can wear out a decent defensive line, but I think the opposite is happening with Penn State. I think they're starting to wear out. I think they wore out Ohio State's offensive line in the fourth quarter. And I think that the same thing happened. That was not a bad Indiana offensive line.
Nope.
And they just, they can take over games because they're fresh, and you're right. I mean, I think the biggest thing with that look that you described where they're playing – you know, you can make a case for three or four defensive ends at the same time when it's long yardage. Is it gives Brent Pry a lot more options on the back end with the linebackers and you know the diamond and nickel packages. You know, when Bob Shoup was there, it just seemed to me that Brent Pry can blitz if he wants to, but he doesn't have to. And you know, whereas Bob Shoup was always blitzing. I think Brent Pry, depending on the opponent and depending on the situation, has mixed and matched a little bit differently than Bob Shoup did. And I think that look and the fact that Penn State's deep there, Steve, has a lot to do with it.
What did it tell you, though, about Brent Pry at the end that he sent Bell on that play?
Yeah, like I said, and it was the right thing to do. I think that Brent, as the season has gone on, has gotten really good. We talk about adjustments as the game has gone on. He's gotten really good at seeing what the other team is trying to do and exploiting it. With it's not just blitzing, but it's timely blitzes, and it's blitzes where there's a mismatch that he's seen as the game's gone on. And Brandon Bell, I just think, Steve, it's great. I remember, you know, Brandon Bell, when he's healthy and he has his legs under him, he's one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten because of all the things he can do. Mm-hmm. He had a good year last year, but he was not 100%. And I think he's much healthier at this time this year than he was last year. And you're seeing the benefits of that. And I think that Penn State has made a concerted effort to try and keep him a little bit fresh, more fresh. And the defensive depth in general, not just the defensive line, but in the secondary, has really helped this team. I thought the defensive backs maybe had better days than they had against Indiana. I were capable of playing better, and I think you're going to see them bounce back as the season goes on. I think that's a pretty deep group, and I think they can play better. I think they will.
We've talked about the defense. We know linebacker at one point was decimated. Now, for the most part, it's become healthy. Right now, that epidemic is on the offensive line. What do you think about the offensive line in the group that you saw at the end, which was with Dowry, Gonzalez, Gaia, Wright, and Bates?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, that is not the dream scenario for Penn State and for Matt Limegrover. But I just think, though, that I was watching as the game went on between breaks, and, you know, Palmer goes out, McGovern goes out, I think, late in the game. Mm-hmm. And you watch when the offense is on the sideline and you see Matt Limegrover talking to the guys, communicating, obviously trying to clear some things up. I think Joe Moorhead went over there a couple of times. But no matter what kind of adversity they faced up front, and you know, Ryan Bates going from left guard to left tackle and playing, you know, pretty well also, they stayed with the run. And it was not only, to me, I thought it was important, but not only did they stay with the run, but it paid off. And also, I think people, you know, it wasn't just the offensive line. There was another challenge there. I don't think Trace was healthy enough to really be the runner that he has been earlier in the year. And it all kind of affected Saquon as well, because Indiana knew that. And that's a big component of that offense, is honoring or respecting Trace, keeping the ball and turning up field. He really couldn't do that. He stayed in the game. So that was not really... That was a Penn State offense that was very challenged, I thought, down the stretch. They stayed with the run. Steven Gonzalez and Derek Dowry at the guard spots, you're right. And to still finish strong the way that they did. I think that this is a team that now expects to win, expects to adjust. And, you know, they're finding different ways to win. I think it says a lot about players. But I also think it says a lot about the coaching development and what goes on in games. And I don't know that I always saw that, maybe the two previous years.
Finally, what are you looking at on Saturday night? What are your thoughts on the game?
Well, I mean, I think Rutgers, obviously, just kind of looking at what happened to them at Michigan State, they were embarrassed. Now they're at home, prime time. I think whatever they have left in the tank, Penn State's going to see it, and I think it'll probably be a lot tougher game than people realize, especially early. I think that Penn State, you know, their offensive line is going to be an issue. I'm not sure Connor McGovern can go, and I think you might have to see more of Steven Gonzalez. The losses at the tackle position, they finally get Paris Palmer up to speed. The poor kid starting to play well, and that has to happen to him. They're going to be challenged probably to figure some things out. But what I do think will happen, though, is I think you will see the Penn State defense make some plays in that game early and late to help the offense. And I do think that the team has received James Franklin's message about focusing on the task at hand and not thinking too far ahead. They have a lot to play for. These guys play hard. I think they want to play for each other. And I think that you will see in the second half this team pull away. I don't think it's an accident that they scored 40-plus in the last three games. And I do think that, you know, Rutgers has trouble stopping the run. And that does not bode well when you're going to face Saquon Barkley. I'll be interested to see how many carries Saquon gets, Steve, only because he had so many against Indiana. And they were tough carries.
Yeah, 33 of them.
He didn't have a lot of easy moments. 11 of those, I think, were ended in lost yards.
Right.
I think if James and Joe get a chance to get up in the third quarter, I really think they're going to try and play some other people, because they got to keep these guys fresh for the stretch run. But I do look for them to finish strong once again.
Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, you got to see.
Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Take a moment to breathe deeply. Clear your mind and consider your surroundings. Notice the sights and sounds, the scents and textures, every sensation. Are you where you want to be? You can redirect your path at any time. After all, life isn't scripted. It's not about winning the race. It's a journey towards your personal best. And that is the ultimate destination. And the all-new 2017 Lincoln Continental is the vehicle to take you there. You deserve this. Nestle into the serene cabin and surround yourself with the reassuring strength of its forms. From its intuitive ease of the 30-way front seat controls to the exceptional collection of amenities, Continental invites everyone to experience the journey in an elegant new way. Sunbury Motors Lincoln will be there for you and your Lincoln whenever, wherever you need it. Stop in today and experience this impressive vehicle for yourself at Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Purchase any new Lincoln in the month of November and receive one complete detail each year for the next 4 years. Sunbury Motors Lincoln, making American luxury affordable. Check out our inventory at sunburylincoln.com.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. 800-795-9565 is the number. That's 1-800-795-9565. Jump on board. We'd like to hear you. This has been quite a ride, hasn't it, boys and girls, huh? But the ride far from complete. They've got Rutgers this week at 8 o'clock. And then we'll find out what they want to do about the Michigan State game after that in terms of game time. It's up to TV. And we'll wait to see what they say about that. But Rutgers first. James Franklin tomorrow night. Letterman's. And the coach before him will be Coquise Washington, the Lady Lion basketball coach. So we'll get a chance to hear from her. I'm looking forward to it as well. So there you are. Get you up to date on what we're doing programming-wise, and that's all good. Okay. 1-800-795-9565 is the number. I went through all those metrics. Those are the metrics they use in the room. And the one thing that struck me was, number one, Penn State's strength of schedule among the top 10's fifth. Right there in the middle. Perfectly fine. 36, strength of schedule, perfectly fine. Now, the strength of schedule is going to change every week. That strength of schedule of 36 is going to go down just by playing Rutgers. It's just the way it goes. But that's where they are right now. Strength of schedule at 36. And it sure is fun and entertaining at this time of the year to discuss such things. I mean, look, Penn State has not been in this conversation now for a long time. And there are older fans that loved and that cherished those days so much when Penn State was always in the conversation. And they remember it. They remember it like it was yesterday. For younger fans, this is a newer experience for them. Yeah, Penn State was in the conversation in 5. They were definitely in the conversation in 8. In fact, that game against with Iowa the other night kept reminding me of the Penn State-Iowa game in 2008 going out there. I'm watching that game. I said, man, I've seen this movie firsthand. I watched this movie first run 8 years ago. I can picture what the Michigan people were thinking. I know. I was sitting in the chair looking at it. Well, now you've got this. And what's happening with this? This is completely different than any other conversation we've had about Penn State, because there was never a 4-game playoff when this conversation was happening. So this is the first time through. Our number 1-800-795-9565. Whatever thoughts you have, I'd love to hear it. I want to know what you're thinking.
I got to thinking last night after this latest college football playoff poll was out. If they could have only beaten Pitt back in September. And obviously, I mean, I granted, this is complete speculation, but you know, when you got time to kill, if they could have only beaten Pitt, and now your cachet is even better, because look what Pitt just did last weekend. You know, where could have they, instead of 8 right now, where could they be? Top 5 maybe? Out just barely on the outside looking in? I mean, it's just stuff fans are probably thinking about.
Okay, I haven't thought about it once.
You were locked in. I was thinking of it. The funny part is, I was thinking about that when you and Dick were calling the basketball game last night.
I just did the game last night.
You did.
I
can't wait to get there to catch those free freshmen.
Oh yeah, no.
Talk about that. Yeah. Take us through that alley-oop dunk play that happened last night. I mean, Girardi has seen I can't even tell you how many games he has seen.
I've never
in his
seen
infamous
it.
Career. I mean, run through that first half again where that play happened.
Well, they throw the ball up to Watkins, and the ball is out 5 feet from the basket. And he grabs it. And he slams it down. I mean, no Penn State player's ever been able to do that. that far away from the basket where you reach back to grab it, you grab it, and then you slam it down? I've never seen that happen before. It's crazy. Like, they're getting better and better. Now, they got Duke this week. They got Duke on Saturday. And obviously, Duke is really good. Jefferson's good. Kennard's good. Grayson Allen's good. Matt Jones is good. Chase Jeter's good. Frank Jackson's good. I mean, those are the six guys they played last. They just got good players. Really good. I mean, Allen's a first-round NBA pick. Frank Jackson is probably a lottery pick, probably in the top 12. Grayson Allen's probably in the top 25. I mean, they're really good. But, you know, Lamar Stevens understands the limitations of his game. He'll get out to the three-point line, and then he'll work himself to a shot that's his shot. He does not take shots that are out of his wheelhouse, that are out of his level of comfort. Tony Carr sees the whole floor. Smooth, confident, calm, great vision, puts the ball in the shooting pocket where you need it. And Watkins is an athletic freak. I don't know how else to describe him. He's a 6'9 athletic freak. And it's really fun because I've seen athletic freaks on other teams before. It feels really good to see one on the team I'm broadcasting.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. And Dr. James Andrews, the renowned orthopedic surgeon, now obviously not a sports bozo, far from it. He's a genius. But he did talk about if football were a brand new sport today, it would be banned. He said it's a collision sport. If we started a new sport today and we wrote up the rules and regulations and we called it football, they probably wouldn't allow it. Now, obviously, there have been... Jerry Jones tried to refute the link between football and brain trauma and so forth. Football's been under attack. And there's no question it's a collision sport. And I don't think there's any doubt that all the negativity surrounding the game has hurt the pro game. It hasn't hurt the college game much. I think it's hurt the numbers in high school that go out for the game, which the domino effect eventually hurts the game. But remember, these conversations that we're having about football right now are not dissimilar to the conversations 110 years ago. If you read Dave Revson's book, Dave Revson from BTN, and we had Dave on to talk about the book at the time, where he talks about the early days of college football, these are the same conversations they were having in 1904, 1905, 1906. Teddy Roosevelt, then the president, had talked about the possibility of banning football. It never came to fruition, obviously. But safety concerns over 110 years ago, brought up then, the conversations were the same then as they are now. Now, obviously, bigger, faster, collisions more violent, equipment better, though, than those days. You didn't have the shoulder pads and the helmets like you have now. So there's rough in their own way. But it's interesting how people talk about banning the game and so forth. You know, and I'm not saying, I mean, James Andrews is only making a statement. He's not, he's a genius. He's a medical genius. But people are not forced to play the game. If I could play high school football again, now it's been 41 years since I played, and I probably would play at the same level now as I did then. I swear, very good. I mean, I was good enough to start for 2 years, but I'd play all over again. For me, it was one of the fun, great experiences of my life. And yeah, did I get hurt? Yeah, you know, my right pinky's broken. My left pinky's broken. I remember I got spiked in a game where a spike went in my leg and the blood was spurting out of my leg, and I just grabbed a bandage, slapped it on, went back in the game. Okay? You know me. I don't know. I was like, yeah, okay, fine, let's go. But I'd do it all over again. I loved playing high school football. Loved it. Was I good at it? Not particularly. I mean, I knew when I played my last high school game, it was going to be my last game. I knew that. There were no offers pouring in, I can tell you that. But I loved it. I enjoyed every second of it. The leg lifts, not that crazy about, but still, you know, and then my favorite day. I'll give you my favorite day. They put the ball on the 50-yard line. And won the first team offense to go against the JV defense. Then we had four plays to make 50 yards. Okay. And we always ran a mile after practice in gear. So we always ran. So we had to go around the field four times. We had an old cinder track that went around the field. So we'd have to run a mile, four laps. Okay. So the deal was double or nothing. I'm sorry. The deal was four plays, 50 yards. If we don't make it, we had to run 2 miles. So we get stopped at the 4-yard line. One of the guys in the offensive line yells out, double or nothing. Oh, okay. So they back us up to the 40. We had to go 60 yards in four plays. So we get a 10-yard penalty to start over again. And we got down to the 1.5, 2-yard line and didn't get in four plays. So we had to run 4 miles. That night, I didn't enjoy it, okay? I can remember being done with 3 miles, and I'm running in full gear. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And I mean, it got to the point where I was trying to at least keep running so it didn't look like I was doing some sort of walk that looked like a run. I was done. I'm like, oh, this stinks. Now, what did I learn out of that? Nothing. I got nothing out of that at all. Believe me, you know, you get something out of it. No, that night, I don't care what the point was. I got nothing out of it. It didn't make me work harder the next day. It didn't make me want to pound it home against East Hartford the next week or against Connard or whomever we're playing or Weathersfield. No, it didn't do anything except make me mad. Like, oh, brother, this stinks.
Got home a little later and was more hungry.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it did. So it didn't quite have the effect that they wanted. Like, oh, I'm punishing you for not getting in.
So you didn't have a star running back on your side of the field? Was it all four pass plays?
No, we had a running back who was really good. We had two running backs who were good. The kid named Paul Rogers, who transferred in from Texas. He's a good player. And then we had a kid named Pete Machete. And Pete was a smaller back, really quick. We had a quick guy by the name of Tony Franklin. I mean,
cut through the defense like a machete. Sorry.
No, but he was a good player, though. He had a good feel for the game. But no, I learned nothing that night. Nothing. Zero. I just learned that. What bitterness meant. Like 2 miles, I'm like, oh, let's get this. Because I mean, 1 mile, I could do 1 mile in pads, no big deal. I didn't care. Bang, 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 bang. 2 miles, I'm like, I remember going around and going, okay, that's lap 8. Here we go, lap 9.
So did you walk home from football practice or tack on another mile or two?
No.
Yeah.
I did not.
That would add even more insult to injury.
No. No, I stole the coach's car. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. No. You're going to make me run 4 miles? I had nothing to do with this problem. Right. I'm taking your car. No. But I would do it all over again. And football is a game that's under attack, under attack, under attack. Yet, funny thing is, you know, Beaver Stadium, last two home games, 107,000, 106,000. Okay? Steeler game on Sunday sold out. Eagle game on Sunday sold out. TV ratings for college football been really good all year. NFL's fallen off, and now they're coming off a great weekend. So people love to watch it. People are into it, even though it's a sport that's under attack. And my problem right now with football is this, is I'm discouraged by the fact that there are fewer and fewer people going out for it, young people. It's discouraging to me that Milton only has 22. How about that? And they aren't the only ones. I mean, they're symbolic of other programs. I mean, Penns Valley doesn't have a lot of people out. Baldy Galeria doesn't. You know, numbers going out for the game are going down. And I would like to see that trend either slow down or stabilize. Because I just think it's a great game. The teamwork of it, the camaraderie of it, the having to fight through it together deal. I mean, I think you learn and get so much out of it. So much. You know, the four mile run thing, I could do without, okay? But still. I learned nothing that night. But I would not trade one day of my high school football experience. I wouldn't trade a day of it. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I got banged up. Yeah, I got cut. Yeah, I got, you know, fingers broken and things like that. So what? It didn't make me not. And I never one time missed a practice. I know you find that hard to believe on this show. Well, that's right. I don't miss any shows either. I never missed one practice. I never sat out one practice in the years I played. Zero. Not one. And there's just so much about it. And I see the sport under attack for this and this and this. And I see people getting discouraged about whether to go out for it or not. I can tell every young person out there that's thinking about whether they want to play football or not, I never regretted a second of it, and I wouldn't have traded those years. All right. And I was no star, and our team wasn't that great. I think, what are we, 4-5-1 1 year, 7-3 the next? Whatever. Okay? We were okay. We're not great. We were okay. Play in front of huge crowds? No, not particularly. But I loved it. So I know that Sports Illustrated is doing a piece this week on football in America and how we feel about it. They've got an online component of this that they do in conjunction with the magazine about how we feel about football today. I think more people today are watching football on TV. Now, I realize that, you know, what we do here is commercial-based. I mean, you know, and I talk about how proud we are to be associated with Sunbury Motors and Brewers Outlet and Purdy Insurance and so forth, okay? Because that makes the show go. The show happens because of them. But I think it's something that I know that people are looking at with the NFL is how many commercial breaks they are. And it's hard to sit in a stadium as a fan and endure all the commercial breaks. So they did a piece on Sports Illustrated about how do we feel about football. And is football more important than your family? 1.4%. Well, that's a stupid question. Okay? That's dumb. I mean, 1.4% say it's more important than their family. There's something wrong with the 1.4%. Is it more important than your job? 20.1%. Well, considering my job's in football, I'm okay. And 26.7% say it's more important than their religion. Okay. Well, those are bothersome questions to me. Okay. To me, it's entertainment. It's an entertainment area. All right. Then when you look at it, they did a Q&A with Roger Goodell. He says football unites people. He says it brings the country together. It unites fan bases. I mean, that's for sure. It does do that. I mean, people in Pennsylvania of all different backgrounds, all different persuasions, rally around Penn State, where that, you know, their rallying cries, the blue and white, and the guys in the white helmets. And it's interesting how football is being examined so closely right now, because it was really thought that, you know, and I even said this, I said 2.5 years ago on this show, doggone NFL's untouchable. Well, now it's not untouchable. Now, is it more important than anything else? No, it's not. But it's to me, it's a great entertainment outlet. I mean, that's what it is, a great entertainment outlet to get, you know, have fun, get passionate about, go tailgate, have a good time, be around people, enjoy it. Go to the game, root for your team, get into it, love the winning, get disgusted by the losing. Now, if it becomes your entire life, then that's, I mean, unless you're working it. I mean, if you're working it, it's a little bit different, obviously. But this is the piece that they did. It's a rather extensive piece in Sports Illustrated about football in America. But when it comes to the contact out there, remember, it is a choice.
And that's something I've tried to emphasize the entire time. Okay? Yeah. Again, I've talked too much about what I did. I haven't really said what I did in high school. I just said I played and I loved it. But it was my choice to play. Well, I thought it was a great choice in the end. And Roman Harper is quoted in here, and he says, look, he says, it's our choice to go out here and do this. Nobody is forcing players to go out and do this. Nobody. Nobody's forcing a player to go out and play. All right, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070, WKOK.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Humbles Wharf. Mike wants to talk about the Penn State Pitt game. Hi, Mike.
I just was going to say, you know, at my office, we Penn State fans always we sort of lament every Monday morning, oh, if we would have won and beat Pitt, we always seem to come back to that game and wish we would have won that thing. And but that's, you know, sometimes you think more about the losses than the wins.
Well, I think for one thing, the Penn State-Pitt game, a big part of that was that Cabinda didn't play. And Bell got hurt early in the game. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Penn State has not lost a game this season where Cabinda and Bell both played. And I think that had a lot to do with it. Pitt played well for the most part that day. But I always ask Penn State fans, what would be more rewarding, beating Ohio State the way they did or beating Pitt?
Right. Well, hopefully we get Pitt next year and give them a loss. What do you think about Michigan State? Are they a veteran team? It seemed like there was high expectations. Is that going to be a team that's gelling now. I've seen they beat Rutgers 49-0.
Talking about Michigan State?
Yeah, I'll hang up.
Michigan State is, Michigan State, O'Connor's been okay at quarterback. The two running backs, Holmes and L.J. Scott, are very, very good. They overpowered Rutgers up front. They flat out overpowered them. The wideouts, Shelton is good. Everybody else is okay. Defensively, they've had a lot of mix and match on the defensive line. Malik McDowell, for example, did not play against Rutgers. And he's questionable for this week's game with Ohio State. Secondary is not bad, although they've lost Copeland for the year at corner. They lost Reschke at linebacker for the year. McDowell's been out, and they've also had Jones has also been out for them up front, Evan Jones. So they've, you know, it's been a mixed bag for them, and the problem they've had is that they've been okay in the first half. They have not been very good in the fourth quarter this year for whatever reason, and I don't know why. Okay. Hope that answered it. And the other part, too, is I think the offensive line, they've been jumbled up. They took Clemens, a fifth-year player, moved him for defensive tackle to offensive line. McGovern's back for a sixth year. So I know he asked about that. Hope I gave him an answer as to where they are and what they're doing. The loss of Illinois stunned me. They've got Ohio State this week at home. First things first, as James Franklin would say, Rutgers, 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 Rutgers. Speaking of which, we'll have on Rutgers beat writer Ryan Dunleavy on Friday's show from NJ.com and the Star Ledger. My brother with picks tomorrow. The sands of time are running out on me. Thus, the days of our lives.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.